Welcome to episode 91 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski joining me from Wisconsin or Minnesota or somewhere up there in states that nobody really cares about, Alan Olson.
Wow. I'm not even sure how I can follow up with that.
I don't know.
We'll go with the upper Midwest.
This week we have talk of major championships, both on the LPGA and PGA tours, as well as, well, basically we're talking about major championships and things that involve that, and Justin Leonard. Our first story in off the tee is Yanni Tseng winning the LPGA championship in sudden death. It took them four holes of sudden death to do it. She did it on the 18th hole after they played 18, then 16, 17, and the 18 again. She basically had about a 5-foot birdie putt on the 18th hole the fourth time around to knock off Maria Yorth, who parred the hole. Winning her first tournament on the LPGA Tour is major, the McDonald's LPGA Championship.
Yeah, that's quite impressive for the first victory.
Lorena Ochoa and Annika Sorensen had a chance, but neither could get it going. They both started the day at 10 under, finishing at 11 under. 12 under got them into a playoff, but Lorena Ochoa had to birdie the last hole to even get to 11 under, so she was never really a factor much. Really not much in it, either of them. Annika Sorensen was in it for a while, but her putting actually let her down throughout the stretch. She'd pull it back inside and then block it out to the right. She missed some short putts very badly. Her birdie putt to get to 12 under on the last hole, in fact, came up a foot and a half short. Shocking, really.
That was probably the biggest shock, was her missing putts inside 5 feet.
We talked a couple weeks ago about Paul Creamer needing to make a par putt against Annika Sorensen to extend a playoff and leaving that 6 inches short. And here Annika Sorensen leaves it short in a major, a foot and a half from about 12 or 15 feet. It was horrible. I mean, I'm not sure you give it a run.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising. And with that, you know, it's not nerves or, I mean, she's been there, done that. So very surprising.
Bit of a brain fart. So Yanni Tseng has been in the news before. She's knocked off Michelle Wee in the U.S. Women's Publinks, Morgan Pressel, Paula Creamer. They all had decent tournaments, but did not finish in the top 10. Paula Creamer, I think, finished at 7 under. 12 under, 276, got it done for Maria Yorth and Yanni Tseng. So congratulations. Our second story off the tee, just a quick one before we get into U.S. Open talk later on. For the first time, the USGA has decided to pair together the first 12 players in order of world ranking. So the first group, not the first group out, but the first group will be numbers 1, 2, and 3, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and Adam Scott. And then there'll be Ernie Els, Jeff Ogilvie, and Justin Rose will play together, 4, 5, and 6. Steve Stricker, Jim Furyk, and KJ Choi, 7, 8, 9 will play together. And Vijay Singh, Sergio Garcia, and Stuart Sink, 10, 11, 12 will play together. After that, it's kind of the mix-up, you know, the usual groupings that they kind of mix up. What do you think of this?
I think it's a great idea. Right off the bat, you get the two big guns on the PGA Tour together. Adam Scott, you know, what's he going to do with his broken pinky? I think it's great. I mean, it's very compelling TV right off the bat. You get Phil, you get Tiger. TV ratings are going to be enormous.
Some people have said that we need them to earn the final round pairing together. You know, we need them to play well so that we can earn that. I say, hey, if you can have 3 out of 4 rounds or 4 out of 4 rounds with them playing together, that's even better.
There's no guarantee those two will be in the final pairing anyway.
Right. Even if they are, this gets us two more rounds.
Yeah, I mean, this is great TV. I mean, I love what the USGA is doing on this. And I mean, the groups at the top are just phenomenal. I mean, this is great golf. I can't wait. And I was looking forward to the US Open anyway. This just makes it that much better.
Put it this way, I think they could sell pay-per-view channels of the first two rounds just showing Tiger and Phil's group. And they could sell that. So mixing in other golfers. And most, you know, they're going to mostly show that when they're on and playing. They're mostly going to show pretty much every shot that group hits. But they could probably sell pay-per-view of just a camera showing that group the entire time.
No, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, if the
so long as Chris Berman,
if Adam Scott doesn't even play or for whatever reason, you got those two by themselves.
Yeah, he'll play. But yeah, Adam Scott broke a pinky on his right hand a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure how much that will affect him, but it'll be interesting when he has to hit a ball out of the rough and grip a little harder. But I think he should be okay. He's not going to contend in the U.S. Open anyway, so you never know. No. Maybe this will make him swing differently and he might contend. You never know.
He still has to putt.
Yeah, he still has to putt. So I'm excited to see this. So it starts Thursday at 11:06 Eastern time.
And 2 days of Chris Berman.
2 days of Chris, back, shut your trap, Berman. We can always watch on mute.
That's true.
Yeah, we'll just make our own commentary in our head. All right, we'll be right back.
I mark my titles with a VJ.
I mark my ball with the Greek symbol for courage, the lambda sign.
I throw my initials on it.
Three crosses around the script.
This is my boy's initials, TP.
I mark my titles with my initials, Holy and Orange.
For 20 years, a black dot over the tee.
Three black dots.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your title list?
The forum topic of the week, started by, we won't mention his name.
Some
schmuck runs the sand trap. Rules officials and slow play on the PGA Tour. The gist of the whole thing is, quite unbelievable that the best golfers in the world don't know the rules.
No, they don't. I posted the story where Matt Goggin called for a rules official after hitting into a standard water hazard, yellow lines and everything. And he was trying to take a 2-club links from the point at last cross, which you can only do on a red lateral water hazard, before his caddy fortunately stopped him, and then they had to call a rules official. You know, so I wonder how much faster the average PGA Tour player would play if they weren't calling for a rules official every time a fly flew near their ball or something. I mean, these are basic rules. A water hazard, it's not exactly a tricky rule here. Point at last cross, flag anywhere on that line back, or re-hit. Or if there's a drop area, you hit from there. It's not a hard rule.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I mean, between the water hazards, I mean, I've seen, you know, watching before, of having a sprinkler head.
Right.
And they have to call a rules official, where can I stand?
Right.
You don't know this by now?
Right.
I mean...
And the point, the counterpoint is that, oh, well, they're playing for millions of dollars, so they don't want to make a mistake and get disqualified. Well, that, I would think, would be even more reason to know the rules yourself. You know, I don't see that as... The rules of golf don't care how much you're playing for. They don't care if you're playing by yourself. They don't care if you're playing with a group. They don't care about any of that stuff. The rules of golf are the same. And in the rules of golf, it's written, golf is played, for the most part, without the supervision of a referee or umpire. The game relies on the integrity of the individual to show consideration for other players and to abide by the rules. All players should conduct themselves, blah, 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 irrespective of how competitive they may be. This is the spirit of the game of golf, but it says, without the supervision of a referee or an umpire. Learn the rules, and it's just frustrating to see a PGA Tour player who's making a few million dollars a year not understand and be able to follow the simplest, most basic rules.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to require him to memorize the whole stinking book, but the basic stuff's out of bounds, sprinkler heads.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure what to do if I'm in a bunker and there's like a power line nearby and then there's like a T sign that is interfering with my line of sight or something. I mean, you know, who knows? You know, but those things don't come up very often.
No, and I would think for the basics.
Yeah, water hazards. Oh, I'm standing on a sprinkler head. What do I do? You know.
Yeah, it is really surprising just how often they call the rules official over for just the most minor.
My ball moved after I addressed it. Uh-oh.
Yeah, what do I do?
Well, I mean, that happened a few times, and yet every time we had to see someone call a rules official over.
Yeah, I mean, golf is a game of honor and integrity, and, you know, if something like that happens, you call the penalty on yourself, or you know the rules, or have your caddy read the rule book.
Yeah, well, fortunately, Matt Goggin's caddy read the rule book, but not enough to where I guess he was confident enough to say, this is what we have to do, we don't need to call a rules official. So I don't know how much is slowing down play, but I imagine it probably adds at least 15 minutes to the average round, because all it takes is one group to call for a rules official and suddenly everyone else is backed up 15 minutes.
It's pretty pathetic.
We'll be back after this.
I mark my Titleist with 3 red dots around the number.
3 crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With 2 blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With 3 blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Justin Leonard wins at the Stanford St. Jude's Classic down in Memphis, Tennessee. It's an event he's won before. He seems to be rounding into shape a bit, but at the same time, Trevor Immelman and Robert Allenby also made the playoff. Justin had to win on, I think, the third hole of the playoff. It was a very windy final round. Trevor Immelman and Justin Leonard got in pretty early. Trevor Immelman shooting a 66. Justin Leonard shooting a 67 to get in at 4 under par. Sergio Garcia also shot a 66, but that only got him to 3 under. So it was a windy day, and the leaders going out did not have a good day. So we had a 3-man playoff. Patrick Harrington, Boo Weekly, and Alex Chica finished at 3 under. It was a day of playoffs because we had the LPGA McDonald's Championship going to a playoff, and we had the Memphis event going to a playoff. But with Leonard's length, I'm not sure he's going to contend at the U.S. Open. His game is clearly in shape, but I'm not sure.
No, I think he's a shot maker, but he doesn't hit the ball far enough off the tee to be able to contend with that. But, I mean, it was good to... I mean, boy, he's getting hot at the right time. fifth top 10 this year. You know, he ranks fifth in the Ryder Cup standings.
Yeah, he's getting hot in the Ryder Cup year, yeah.
So, I mean, it's perfect, but there again, I don't think it's going to help him much in the U.S. Open. I think he'll finish top 20, but you really need to be a bomber to play well.
And Immelman figures that the U.S. Open is going to be the toughest major that for him to ever win. So, despite the fact that his game seems to have finally rebounded, starting with the fourth round at the Memorial when he finally started to put things together, he's kind of had a tough since winning the Masters. He's basically given himself almost no shot to win the U.S. Open.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre because he won the Masters, which is just like the U.S. Open. So, I mean, I think he's got as good a shot as anybody else.
True. He also said that if he was asked about winning the Grand Slam, and he said it's safe to consider that if he wins the Grand Slam, that he will retire immediately upon winning. So maybe there are some that will hope he doesn't win the U.S. Open because, you know, then he'd be halfway to retirement.
Yeah, it was really interesting. The weather played a huge factor. I mean, I think this was the highest stroke finish since like 1989 or something like that. 4 under.
I mean, remember last year, Woody Austin shot a final round like 62 to win, so... Mm-hmm. Best players without a major, it's a topic that comes up around major time. We'll just run through. Alan, you can add a comment if you have any. Number 10, Rory Sabatini. He's ranked 14th in the world. So
that's surprising. I didn't realize he was that high.
Yeah, well, when he's not busy making fun of Tiger, he occasionally plays decent golf. Stuart Sink is up there. I mean, the guy only has 4 wins. Just like Rory Sabatini, but 4 wins, Stuart Sink, world rank of 13th.
Mr. Consistency, always in the top 20.
But never in the top one, huh? No. Henrik Stenson is ranked 15th. He has 1 win on the PGA Tour and 5 on the European Tour. We don't hear much about Henrik because he plays a lot in Europe. 4. Boo Weekly, 2 wins, of course, both at the same tournament. He's a newcomer to the list.
It is a little surprising. I mean,
second year on tour, really. I think you need to be out there a little bit more before you're on the best player never to have list.
Yeah, I would say at least 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, Aaron Baddeley, 2 wins, so the same number as Boo Weekly, but he's been out here a lot longer and he's contended in majors, so he's number 5. I can't disagree with that.
No, I completely agree.
Andres Romero, 1 win on the PGA Tour and 6 other worldwide. World rank of 24, he makes the list. He contended, of course, at Carnoustie last year. I'm not sure I'd like to see him on the list either. He's pretty fresh to the world of golf, really.
Yeah, really too new. I mean, he hasn't played in a lot of majors, so I mean, for him to top 5, I don't know about that.
Yeah, Justin Rose comes in at 4th with 0 wins on the PGA Tour. The guy just basically never shows up on Sunday, so... I think he's going to be the best player without a major for a long time, or in the list.
Yes, he's going to be on the list for quite some time.
Anthony Kim makes the list. I basically completely disagree with that. He's way too fresh to be put on this list. Give the guy a chance before you put him on the list, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's what, his second year?
Steve Stricker? Not too many majors suit Steve's game, the U.S. Open being one of them, but on a long course this year, maybe not.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's in the top 10 world ranking. Other than the last couple of years, he's... kind of took a small detour there for a while, so...
Right, and the last one, KJ Choi, shows up. Player's not on the list. I can think
everybody's
of
everybody's favorite putter.
And someone who's playing with Tiger and Phil. So, I mean, where did Adam Scott and Sergio Garcia go? I don't get it.
I have no idea, because in my book, there's 1 and 2 right there.
They've both won... Yeah, exactly. They've both won the players, so maybe the author is considering that to be a major.
I have no idea. I can't believe it. I mean, for them...
I don't know.
For them to not even be in the top 5... They didn't even make the top 10.
It must be a list of best players, other than the obvious, to have not won a major.
Well, it could be. Captain Obvious. We don't want to go with the 2 guys that should be up there. We'll go with 10 other guys.
We'll go with a guy that's played like 12 events ever. Carolyn Bivens, we ragged on her a lot last year, at the beginning of the last year. She seems to have kind of righted the ship. We haven't heard much about her, good or bad, lately, so that's a good thing. And now she's taking control of the LPGA Championship starting in 2010. It will be known as the LPGA Championship presented by somebody. It won't be the McDonald's LPGA Championship anymore. So they're going to take ownership of the event. They're going to use that money and stuff that they raise to kind of go into a retirement fund. You know, it's going to be kind of like the Players Championship is for the PGA Tour. It'll be the LPGA Championship.
There'll be some sort of sponsor, though. I would imagine it's probably going to end up being like the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, they'll have a
the Rose Bowl by City.
They'll have a presented by, you know, like the Players Championship presented by UBS. It'll be like that, but they will own the tournament and thus be able to take any profits from it. So I think that's a good move. And as much as we ragged on Carolyn Bivens before, I want to say, hey, this looks like a good move.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is very smart on her part. It's getting not the sponsor's name out there, it's getting the LPGA's name out there instead. And I mean, I always thought that was kind of hokey about their major championships were all
Right. The Weetabix Women's Open, the McDonald's, this, the John Atkinson, the 10-ish handicapper who played to an 11 off an 8.0 index. He finished his round. Alan, we were off by 5 strokes. He shot 114 and we had guessed 109. Actually, I guessed 109 and you copycatted.
Well, that's, we won't even go.
but Tony Romo shoots 84, Justin Timberlake shoots 98, and Matt Lauer sinks a 20-footer to shoot an even 100. So I was dead on with my pick of 2.5 for being the number that would break 100, you know, as the over-under. 2.5 did it, because 2 did it, 3 almost did it. So it was a good pick there. But 114, he started off with 4 bogeys, and then it all went to pot on the 5th hole.
Yes, the odds of him breaking 100, not very good. And the fact that he was hitting a hybrid off of every tee.
That was his game plan.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing for bogey or double bogey, apparently.
Right, Bob Rotella was his caddy, so I'm not sure. Bob might have lost some sales there if it all went to pot on the 5th hole and he couldn't get it back together. It's not a good advertisement for Bob Rotella.
Who incidentally has a new book out, but anyway.
Yeah, so 114, not bad. I mean, I give the guy credit for trying, but it would have been cool if he could have done it, but that's over. Watch it the hour before the final round of the U.S. Open begins.
Were you surprised that Tony Romo and Justin Timberlake both? Well, Romo for sure was going to break 100.
No, I had picked two. Yeah, I had picked two of them, and I thought Lauer had an outside chance. I mean, Romo, I mean, he's qualified, so there will be pros that play in the U.S. Open that will shoot higher than 84. He's kind of established the Mendoza line, but it's now the Romo line. Yeah.
You should market that.
The Romo line. Tiger's knee, in case people have been wondering, he seems to be okay.
Or so we've been told.
Tiger Woods did not appear to favor his knee on Monday or Tuesday, but he only played 9 holes both days.
This is going to be really interesting. It just, I don't know. I mean, he has what's supposedly minor surgery and then just disappears forever, then comes back, plays a couple 9 holes.
I'm almost wondering how much of it is a psych out thing. He might have been fine. Maybe he just didn't want to play Memorial. I don't know. I mean, Memorial kind of, it's kind of annoying. I mean, it's Jack's tournament and that's all fine and good. But it thunders, you know, 3 days a week there every year. The stopping and starting, the long days, you know, it kind of sucks. So maybe he just doesn't like to play Memorial. And this, you know, his 2 years ago with his father's death and this year with the knee, it's just given him a convenient excuse.
Could be.
And he certainly as heck wasn't going to go play Memphis. I mean,
no.
So,
no.
There's nothing to read into that. He wasn't going to play that if they let him have an appearance fee.
They could give him the entire purse. He's not showing up.
Michelle Wee will be showing up at the U.S. Women's Open because she's qualified. She also finished, I think, tied for 4th or something like that in a German tournament. Granted, it was on the Ladies European Tour, so not exactly the stiffest competition, but she carded rounds of 67 and stuff in Germany, and she finished at 137, so the second best score of the day in her qualifier when there were many more spots being taken than 2. So she makes it easily into the U.S. Women's Open.
Yeah, good for her. I mean, the last couple weeks, she's just been on fire.
And I don't know if her parents have wised up or if she's gotten away from the advice of her parents and is doing things more on her own, because she seems to be sticking to a more sensible game plan ever since this year, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think this puts women's events and you know, trying to qualify. And, you know, last year was a pure nightmare. This year, things seem to be going a little more smoothly.
Yeah. And I think she's going to earn a lot more respect by having to earn her way into the tournaments. And I mean,
well, and she did into some of them once last year because she had finished so high in the majors the previous year. So she had earned her way into those. But last year, of course, she'd left the one early and then practiced at the one event before the other players could show up. And she didn't call Annika to apologize or, you know, last year was all mostly PR. And bad play. This year, no PR hassles and much better play. So, you know, she's a talent, and I've never denied that. So I hope she gets it back together. And, you know, the LPGA Tour needs all the help that it can get.
Well, if they haven't sold enough tickets to the U.S. Women's U.S. Open because it's Annika's last one, this is going to get more people to come out for sure.
Right. We need a Michelle Wee, Lorena Ochoa, Annika Sorenstam showdown on the final day.
That would be nice.
With Paula Creamer and Natalie Gulbis thrown in there just for
caddies.
Well, they could play. But, you know, let's go with people whose names we can pronounce. That would be a step up for the LPGA Tour. Yeah. That about does it for episode 91 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Check our show notes out online at thesandtrap.com. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Brzezinski saying, I'm betting we won't see Tiger do one of those big fist pumps off the back of a slipped green this year.
Probably not, unless he's doing it on top of Bill's head.
Bye-bye.